Do you think there's any other details that don't show up that you should talk about the Bureau?
Well, I think that too much detail would upset the thing. I think there's certain basic principles that were involved. And I think that you have to see the thing within the whole economic picture in the country. And the historic fight of organized labor, which probably started with the miners way back, and the Molly Maguires and the efforts of the employers to destroy the labor movement, to hang the leaders and to put spies in, and the Hayward situation. And it's all an attempt by the employers at that time to prevent labor organization, better wages and better working conditions, get rid of the company stores, and this whole thing was tied in together. And then came the right to work laws and this whole business. And you have to see it, and it's still going on. You have to see it in the context of organized labor's right to survive and to represent its members, and to see that they get the best work, the best wages, and can survive the inflationary periods and the unemployment periods, the ability to build up strike funds to carry them over. So this was only a part of the function of the labor movement in order to assist members to be protected against occupational hazards, both safety and disease. So it moved into this new field, whereas now the organized labor movement is recognizing that this is a very serious situation. And you also have to realize that the individual worker is still apprehensive that if he raises his voice against conditions in the shop, considering unemployment today and this whole thing, he's liable to lose his job. And so you have to figure on that, which is going on right now. So it's a question of how strong the union is, what kind of an agreement they can make, and whether they will include occupational health and safety provisions in their contracts, which some of the unions are doing. And some of them are not doing. So I would say that the Workers' Health Bureau made a constructive contribution to the value of occupational health and safety information to organized labor. And that this was recognized from the time of the Triangle Fire, which triggered the International Lady Garment Workers Medical Program. And which developed as a result of that through the service that we were able to provide with the experts, which at that time were being trained in the universities, which is not the case today. You don't have departments of occupational health in most of the universities today. We had them then. You don't have Alice Hamilton's, and you don't have Emily Hayhurst, and you don't have C.A.A. Winslow, and you don't have Henderson and Haggard's, and this whole group of people that we were able to put together to serve the labor movement, because these were the victims. Mm-hmm. And they saw the relationship between these technological developments, which were moving at such an accelerated pace in paints and in sprays and in tetraethyl lead and all these things. They saw that they had to go to the labor movement to make them cognizant of what this was doing to their people. And so the Workers' Health Bureau fulfilled this function from 1920, when this idea was developed from the Joint Board of Sanitary Control, to 1929, when the Bureau was finally closed. The standards were published. The Building Trades Code was adopted in many states. And the Roosevelt period set in. And that became a new concentration. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would say it had its function, it had the cooperation of the occupational scientists, not only in this country, but in Italy and in Russia and in England, all of whom understood the situation. And then a new period set in, and you had a new economic impasse that had to be bridged, and the labor movement had to fight for its own existence. And it's not settled yet. Mm-hmm. With inflation and with the need for increased wages and the misinformation that is circulated by local housewives and so forth, blaming organized labor for their problems. There's a whole new educational program and all kinds of new groups springing up. There's a duplication of organizations, all crying for money from the same people. And there's a lack of coordination nationally and statewide. And it's sort of a power struggle as to who's going to get the headlines and who's going to be elected. And it's all tied up with the political game. So how it's going to come out, we don't know. The young man that Irving had here, young Mr. Lee, who was their librarian, and subsequently the Tabashaw and why can't I think of this man, the other thing, the firm that was set up. I'd have to look it up. I can never think of his name. Has been taken over by the Equitable Life Insurance Company. And they have made available to Tabashaw and Associates, whatever the other guy's name is, which you have, $1.25 million for the addition of research personnel. They are not interfering in any way with the work of Tabashaw. And it will go on just the way it is. And it is probably all this material which had been purchased by the retail store employee. Due to the fact that the librarian there is very ill and is not going to be able to handle the thing. My proposal has been that the material go to Novia Street where they can handle it, and that part of the research funds which they have been given be used to tabulate the stuff and make it available as background material for the current situation. That is what I think is going to happen. And in addition, the Ford Foundation has given $500,000 to this University of California nonprofit group, which has taken on Fred Ottoboni, who was with the State Department of Public Health as one of their outstanding occupational disease scientists, which all of whom they dropped and they moved the thing to Sacramento. So they've taken Fred on as their occupational disease expert. So we have now two groups. We have the university under Bruce Poyer with Fred Ottoboni, and we have Tabashaw Associates, which has been reinforced by this money from Equitable. Now, there's nothing wrong with life insurance companies wanting to reduce the claims against them by preventive measures. We were working in New York with Metropolitan, Dublin. Well, Equitable has understood this thing, and the Fireman's Fund is also operating in this field. They want to reduce the claims against them by preventing accidents and occupational diseases. So this is understandable. There's nothing unethical about it at all, as long as they don't interfere with what can be done between the scientists, the occupational disease scientists, and the labor unions in setting up machinery for contracts and so forth. Get in touch with Emil because they have a tape library. Mm-hmm. They rent tapes. And you should see that they purchase from you. Now, I don't want any tapes to go anywhere until I have gone over them, because I want to be sure. They're very dangerous implications mm-hmm. that might have gotten into the conversation, or your interpretation of the conversation, which would best be eliminated, because the purpose is to unite and build constructive results. And I think that this woman in Denver, whom Irving told me about, who is setting up this thing in Denver, and it should be, we should include people like Gaylord Nelson of Wisconsin, which was the first state that had an occupation disease, and Harrison Williams in New Jersey, who put the thing through. We might be able to set up a national organization.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like to get a little bit of a kind of chronology on you. Like when you went to Yale, when you got your degree, when you were married and went to Louisville, just to get sort of an overall picture of your career, too.
But this is what I don't want.
Yeah, well, this won't be, I cannot include that on the tape. This is for my, you know.
For your own personal. Well, that I already gave you.
Well, we started some of it, but I didn't get the specific, like, when did you graduate from Yale?
Probably 1909, may have been 1908, but I have my alumni, Yale alumni, with the date on it. And I have it in the other room. I can't get it while I'm tied up here.
And then after Yale, you...
Then I went to the Art Institute in Chicago. I guess it was for 6 months. And then I went to the School of Applied Design in New York. And then I married, and that was in 1910. So between 1908, probably, was the date in mm-hmm. New Haven. I don't know. It moved very quickly because I went from one place to the other rather fast in an attempt to decide whether that was to be my vocation mm-hmm. or not. Between then and 1910, when I moved to Louisville, the change in my art involvement was transferred to economics and sociology and these things.
Mm-hmm. Was that prior to your marriage, actually, or was that related to the...
That was at the point of the fact that in Louisville there was no art department at all at the university, and there was no interest in art. Mm-hmm. And so there was no place to carry on that part of my background. So it shifted to the whole question of economics and sociology and the development there.
And your first husband, Burnham, that was then?
Yeah.
And he was a sociologist?
No, he was, I told you what he was. He was associated with Brandeis and the First People's Lobby in Washington.
Now, did you work
And he Washington? Was, he went to Columbia and after having studied in Switzerland, then he was an ardent single taxer, and he was associated with Fells and with the whole single tax mm-hmm. movement and with the whole movement of public ownership, which was developing at that time in Cleveland and Ohio. And he went to Columbia and studied under Seligman and the sociologists and economists at Columbia. That was before I knew him at all. And he was associated, as I say, in the First People's Lobby with Brandeis and Washington, and compiled the first directory of the World Almanac. So the whole thing swung around. Mm-hmm.
And then you remained in Louisville until his death?
No, we moved to New York in 1918.
And that's when you took the class at Columbia and then...
That's right.
And then he died after you'd already started the Workers' Health Bureau, though.
He died in 23. Was it 23? Yeah, it must have been 23.
And you had a daughter from that marriage?
I have a daughter. I have a daughter. I don't want my personal life in this thing at all.
And then after the Workers' Health Bureau folded...
Then we turned the material over, the office and everything, to labor research, because that was the change in the whole picture at that time. It went from the health factor to the question of unemployment and labor research, and they have all these publications. Their present publication is Economic Note. They're still in existence at the same address.
But they didn't keep any of the material. They then turned it
over. Well, that material was turned over to, because they didn't have the space for it. They kept certain records, which they sent me. Mm-hmm. But their material was, they didn't have space for it, and they turned it over to one of these I don't know what you call these organizations that sprung up among different groups that went out of existence, and they just threw the stuff away.
Then,
so what we were able to salvage was what I kept personally, what Charlotte kept, and what Bob Dunn kept at Labor Research, and we were able to, there it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then Oregon came and got one set, and Eugene, University of Oregon at Eugene, and this is the other set.
Now, did you remain in New York after the Bureau closed? When did you move to Chicago?
In 1933.
And that's when you became involved in the...
In the railroad. Yeah. Editor helped to edit the paper.
And that was, you were working on railroad pensions at that time.
We were working on railroad pensions, and we were working on unity between the railroad unions to survive the cuts in personnel on the railroads and the whole rationalization program, which was being put together by the railroad.
And then you remained involved in the railroad work until you came to California?
The railroad unity movement was dissolved and the office was closed. And then we came to California. My husband was a train dispatcher. He went to work for the railroads here. But he came out here to edit a series of Central Labor Council papers.
Oh, I see.
And I helped with those papers.
And then... When did you become involved with the reporter and the...
We set up the reporter in 1941 when Hitler closed the English Channel to California's What time is it? Because Alice has
to my mom and try to get themselves back on their feet over a 3-year period when their farms were under Conciliation Commission. Farm Debt Adjustment Committee, the whole, we had Olson was the governor. Very hard for me to talk. Let me get that Yale thing. Address.
What?